This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Hi, guys. Welcome back to Embracing Change. We're so glad that you guys have joined us for episode 6 of our season called From Mess to Message. And we have a great special guest with us here today, LaTonya Jordan. She's going to be sharing a little bit about her story. Thank you for being here with us.
Hello.
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 Welcome, LaTonya.
So, LaTonya, tell me a little bit about where you're from and a little bit about your history.
Well, I'm from Hamilton, Ohio, and I have lived in different places, though, although I'm from Hamilton.
You were born in Hamilton?
I was born in Hamilton.
Okay.
So, but you currently live in Cincinnati?
I currently live in Cincinnati.
Got you. How many siblings were in your house growing up, and a little bit about your parents? And
well, I had siblings that were my cousins.
There you go.
But I do have one brother, and we didn't live together.
Got you. Half sibling, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So it's 5 cousins, and we would be, I would be sister cousin. And then I have one biological brother.
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody yesterday about how family is, it's like all mixed up, and it's like some is choice, but like I have a brother who has another sister, but I'm not related to her. So when I go to introduce her, I say, this is my brother's other sister. Yeah. And people look at me funny, and I just go, she's my sister once removed. So anyway, so family kind of comes in all different flavors.
And oh, I'm sorry. I want to clear this up too. I do have another sibling. I have my sister cousins, or I'm the brother cousins. You know what I mean? That's 5. And then my biological brother is, you know, him. And then I have an adopted sister.
Oh, nice.
So it's a little different mixing that too.
Yeah.
You're talking about Heather?
Heather.
Mm-hmm.
That goes from,
Heather's like your daughter's sister, though.
She is.
Like your daughter's
She's your daughter's sister.
She is.
You know what I mean? And I think that's why it's hard for you to sometimes acknowledge her just as your sister, because she's your daughter. You know what I mean? Even though she may in the world first be your sister, but for you, since she's been 18 months old, she's been your daughter.
Yes.
So basically you had a hand and help raise her, so to speak. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
That's cool. My older sister did that to my younger sister. So, like I said, family comes in all kinds of flavors, buddy.
Oh, God,
all kinds
it does.
Of different
and now,
variations.
I mean,
that's
and
good.
Now that we've kind of brought that up, LaTonya, can you tell us how we got to that journey a little bit about how you, you know, when you talk about the dynamics of your journey, can you tell us how it looked like a real mess but became the message? Like, what was the messy parts of it for you as you were growing up and as you, you know, when you were born and the things you can remember and how you started this journey?
Okay. On which one is it? My adopted sibling or my sister cousin?
I'm talking about your life, period.
Okay,
your
okay.
whole life. I want to know how you got to this chair.
Okay.
I think they are part of the journey, but it's we're really talking about how you got to this chair, how you seeing God take your mess that seems so messy and make a message out of it and have you sitting at the chair at a 42-year-old woman who is independently taking care of herself with a good job, raising her children, those kind of... So we walking this thing back to how we got here.
And as an entrepreneur as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is... Yeah. Here I go.
Yeah. The floor
is
yours.
It started... A long while ago, long time ago, was, you know, I was born and my mother couldn't take care of me. And I was given to a great aunt. She was my great aunt, but I knew her as my mom at the time for years. So it started there. And then she died when I was about 7, maybe 8. And life began to, like, spiral then for me because I was, so many other doors were opening. Like, okay, this is not my mom. Okay, this is my mom. And realizing the dream that I was in at the time, I felt complete because I thought I had everything. But I had everything. But at the time, as a child, when you think, you know, the life you was living, you thought that was it. And then when she died, so much more stuff opened up.
Do you believe that when she passed away that... You said something very compelling. You said that I believe that I knew I had everything, but when your mom, your great aunt mom died, you felt like so many other things opened up. Do you believe that things opened up through a shattering moment, that the reality you had lived in now became a little more shattering?
Yes, it was shattering because it was one that, as a child, you look at everybody else's families, and I thought my family was just like theirs. But I didn't know that there were different dynamics in family and how that worked. And so as a child, you know, opening up that, you know, my great aunt, who I only knew as my mom, I couldn't even call her aunt. And as I looked at her in the casket, and I'm thinking, I cannot, I wasn't even comfortable saying aunt, but this was my aunt. And then when I spent time with my biological mother and I looked at her, I couldn't say mom. Mm.
Did you know before your great aunt passed that she was your great aunt and that you had a biological mother?
No.
So it was upon her death that you learned all that.
Yes.
That had to have felt like the rug was just completely pulled out from underneath you.
Very snatched.
Yeah.
Then that's when I felt like abandonment and rejection and all these other things that I had to fight then. And
so it's almost like you was whole, right?
Yeah.
And the world that you knew was whole. And then when your aunt passed away, the shattering began to break off in your life. Like you became, now life became pieces.
It was pieces. Definitely was pieces. And so after that, I went and stayed with, you know, my family member that was my sister, cousin. Because when my Aunt Mary was living, that was just a sister for me. But when she died, no, this is my cousin, and now I have to be a cousin, and it's not my sister. And, you know, now my cousins, the little cousins that were around me became siblings, and it wasn't a reality for me. So I couldn't make it a reality.
Couldn't get your brain around. It sounds like your identity was all messed up.
Yeah.
And who you were, who they were, how to relate to them, how to feel like you're bonded to someone. Like you, did you have that expectation of, since this is my mother, I should feel in this moment that she is like my mother? Or was that just like total weird?
It was completely weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not that I haven't seen her before, because I remember her picking me up and taking me to the park.
You talking about your biological mom?
My biological mom. But me and her really never had a heart-to-heart. Mm. It was like, oh, I'm having ice cream. Oh, I'm playing. And this is, you know, I'd never called her mom.
So you just knew her as Miss Miriam. She's a nice lady.
Nice lady.
Nobody has really told you anything else about her.
Right.
And so you just would have fun with her and then go home and tell your mom all about the day.
My day. Yes, that's how it went.
Yeah.
So how did you process that when you moved in with her? Because you moved in with your biological mother, no?
Mm-mm. No? Never.
Never. Okay, so you still stayed with your cousins that were, to you, your siblings.
Well, technically.
But I did. Her I mom. I spent a little time when she was getting sick.
Yeah, but let's go to the story. And the reason I can inject in here is because I'm such a part. I am like her. Mama, sister, cousin. I am all of those things as well. So I'm part of her story. I'm part of her mess and her message.
So
the part of the mess that I would say part of the mess is because my mom is who raised her. So my mother, Mayor Helen Wilms, which is her great aunt, was my mother.
Yes.
So she raised, you know, she is the one, she lived with her. So she was like my sister as well, and as well as my cousin. So I was part of her sister cousin.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so in that moment when Mama died, there was a lot of options. My sister Linda, who, you know, she's talking about, she lived with, that her children became her siblings. We got to back up a little bit for this because, and maybe that you don't remember this as much, but I don't know how you could possibly forget it. But anyway, when Mama died, your mother did come around, and we were thinking that she was going, that was when your world kind of turned upside down, because that's when we kind of introduced you to her, and you was like, what? And that's when she said, I really can't take her, because she was living with her father at that time, and she was feeling like she just didn't know what to do, even though you were 8 years old. So then me and Linda came together, and of course, Linda felt like I was the better option, remember?
Yeah.
She was like, well, I think that, you know, that you should take her, and you should get your apartment, and y'all should live together, and you should raise her. And I was like, who says so? You know, because I had a son, and I didn't have him, and so for me, I felt like it was the right thing to do because I know how much Mama loved her. Our mother really, really loved LaTanya. And that was like a child that she, you know, I'm telling you, like loved with her whole heart. And I saw things that she did for LaTanya that I felt like she didn't even do for me. And then as my sister saw my mom do things for me that she didn't even do for her. So it was that ripple effect of what we saw our moms do. And so when Mama died, when she, in May of 89, LaTanya would have been 9 that next October. I think she would have been 9 that October. And I decided to go ahead and bring her. We moved into a unit where my sister was. So my sister lived on the top unit. We lived in the middle unit. And that way I felt like I had the support of my sister as well. And she was already familiar with them, where she wasn't as familiar because I had just came home from prison to live with them like that August of 88. And then Mom died May of 89. So I only had a short period of time to really, you know, get to know her in that way. And she knew me, but she didn't know me. But right. She knew my sister a lot better because my sister had been around the whole time.
And, you know, just hearing this, too, like Mary Helen must have had just a huge heart
because
she to take in children that were not her birth children and, you know what I mean, and become their mom. She did it for you.
Mm-hmm. She did it for my sister.
Yeah.
She had a really big heart.
Yeah,
really
that's really cool. That's really cool. She was a mama to a lot of
And so LaTanya lived with me first. And, of course, my own inability to be present and me living the life I was living was probably another shattering piece for her. It was another piece that was broke off for her. And me and her have talked about this, and I've asked her to forgive me, and we've grown past this. It's been 30 years, you know what I'm saying? We've healed it.
Yes.
And yet, but we want to talk about it because I had to go back to her in part of my transformation and healing and ask her to forgive me for not being able to do what she needed because the harm that I created, which I'll let her pick it up from there, because the harm that I created put a gulf because my sister was in such a place, too, where she had, you know, a few children, and she just wasn't, you know, and then the way that the social service welfare people came in when I went to prison, it was a big thing, and because I went to prison for drugs. So then that brought in the Child Protective Services. She was living with me, You know what I mean? So it brought a whole nother. So they took her out of the home.
Wow.
And so that was a whole nother dynamic that just shattered her mess. So I'll let you pick it up from there, because I was out of the picture at that point when all of these things happened to her because of the choice I made.
Now, how long had that been? So you had been with Lakrita how long before she was gone then?
About a year.
About a year.
So you had bonded with her.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably had
she lived started the princess life.
I did.
Feeling settled.
No, yeah. she lived the life. I
lived the life. I had my room the way I would dream to have it.
Yeah.
You know, baby dolls. They had canopies. Every dress. They had their shoes, accessories. I had a canopy bed. So,
wow.
Yeah. Oh,
that sounds like a dream.
Yeah. And my own TV to watch.
Wow. So what, like, where was your head at that point? Like, what did that, like, how did you process that your second mom, or third, I guess at that point, mom, third mom is now gone?
Then I went on a blackout at that point.
Yeah.
Numb, in and out, you know, for a long time. Built up a wall of where I couldn't trust people.
Yeah.
And, you know, being on a race in my mind and not even, like, doing drugs, but I was on a race, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was on a race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, made a lot of decisions in that moment. You know, even, you know, my husband and all that stuff. And I didn't even realize I was there until just one day a switch went off. And a lot of stuff I blacked out. Like, you know, when you talked about if I seen my mom, you know, a lot of this, I guess, when you go through some traumatic experience, you just block stuff out.
You do. Mm-hmm. You really do.
And stuff them way down. A lot of stuff I blacked out.
Yeah.
You know, things that I have done and, like, in my relationships and, you know, just I went on a spiral at that point.
How long did that last?
That she ended up in foster care. Talk about that experience.
Oh, after that.
After I got sent away.
After that, you know, spiral meaning, you know, I didn't trust nobody at a wall, the real tall wall. And then I went to foster care.
Oof.
And in there trying to find my way. And I had the first foster lady, she wasn't very loving. You know, her and her husband, they wasn't very loving. And then I had to deal with other foster kids, six other ones plus me. And they came from, like, different hurt and pain. And so, you know, being that I already been through, you know, a lot of pain anyway, I'm like, all right, let's bring it on here. You know? Mm.
Let's come on. I know.
Yeah, it's like, bring it on.
Let's hit your pain, hit my pain, and let's see who wins.
Yes, yes. It was definitely like that because she was verbally abusive, like the foster mom. And. Mm. She even talked to her husband very bad in front of us.
Wow.
And so the foster kids, they had that same attitude, you know what I mean? And me, now I'm having an attitude because, you know, I'm a fighter at heart. So, all right, let me just line everybody up in my mind, see what I got to do.
I know that's right.
Wow.
Let me line them up in my mind, see how I'm going to take them out.
You know, that so surprises me because I know you now and, like, you have
no,
the
that's
softest.
No, she has that heart, too, back then. It's
yeah.
Just, it was survival.
Well, right. Yeah, but, I mean, if you're saying, like, okay, I'm going to line them up, I'm going to figure them out. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. But that was, yeah, I could see the survival part of that, though. You had to do that for your own protection.
Yeah.
How long were you in that home?
I think maybe had to be about 3 years.
Wow.
You know, 3 years there and some months somewhere else, because I finally had got the strength to tell my caseworker what was happening. And so then they said, we got to get her out of here. And they got me out.
So there was a lot of trauma.
And that's why her hair is really important to her, too, because of the way that they treated her with her hair.
Yeah.
They you know, back in the day when you're dealing with racism, being racist, and she was the darkest child in the foster home, she dealt with a lot of that. And so they cut it. They didn't know what to do with her hair. So they cut it all off and made her very self-conscious into that. And that's why even today when we were talking, she's very, like she said, I'm not anal about a lot of things, but I am anal about my hair, because she remembers how that triggered her identity, her looks, how she felt about herself. And I can say these things because she and I have had deep, deep conversations about this part of her healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she had the courage to finally tell it, and it helped. She found her voice. And then that's when my sister stepped up, right?
Yeah, and I told your sister, Linda, and I looked at her in her eyes and told her, and I'll never forget it. She said, I'm getting you out of there. Mm-hmm. You're coming home.
Mm-hmm. It had to have been like feeling like you're being saved.
And I felt like I was being saved, yeah.
Yeah. So you went to live with her. How old were you at this point? Because you had said you were in that home, 3 years, and then somewhere else a month. So were you around 13, 14 years
about
old?
About 12.
Yeah, about 12.
About 13. Okay. About almost 13.
About 12 or 13. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
A real critical time for a girl anyway.
Very critical.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you're starting your period. Yeah. You're hormonal on top of everything.
Right, you're
else.
Developing. Yeah, yes. You're physically changing, all of that. So what was it like going into live with? It was Linda was the name. So you're coming out of this very traumatic foster home.
Yeah.
Totally, like, shut down. Coming in to live with Linda. How long did it take for you to kind of wake up a little bit?
I don't know. It took a while. It took a while because, like I said, I was still struggling with my identity.
Yeah.
And knowing the dynamics now, what they were, you know, and feeling different things that I felt like, you know, I wanted to feel that same feeling that I had with my Aunt Mary. But it was no longer going to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So coming back, even though I was happy, but coming back to a reality I had to face. And, you know, when you're kids, kids don't get how other kids feel. And so, you know, knowing that these were my cousins and that was their mom, that was their dad. Yeah, I struggled.
Because did you feel like the one that was left out again in that way, that rejection?
Yes.
Because they had a place of belonging. You were included, but then it was about how you felt. Because I love the way you said that. So insightful when you say kids, you know, children don't understand other children and the experiences they are experiencing, because they're really just thinking about themselves. Because children are selfish by nature.
Yes, they are. Yes,
they're
they
very
are.
Self-centered for sure.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So you were feeling they had everything. They had a mom, a dad, and I was the outsider.
The outside. I felt like the black sheep.
Okay.
You know, and I felt like the black sheep. And then, like I said, when I got in school, because when I was in school, I was in a special class, you know what I mean? And so I wasn't back then when Aunt Mary was living. But when Aunt Mary died, you know, I was younger. And
all those traumatic events.
All these things I had to deal with. Now I had to deal with that and deal with the fact that I wasn't catching on to my grades.
Comprehending
and understanding what I needed to do. So then I had, you know, being picked on in class and finding myself through middle school. it was very hard.
Sounds like you didn't feel safe anywhere.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know how you got through that. Like, was it just trying to live and get through every moment?
Well, I prayed a lot. I prayed. A lot of times I prayed myself crying to sleep. Would be so frantic that my hands would shake at night. And I would hold my hands down. I said, God, help me to calm down. And it will work because eventually I wouldn't be shaking at night anymore, you know.
When did things kind of start lifting? When did you start feeling you could see the light at the end of that tunnel?
Things start lifting, I'll say, when I got about like 16, 17.
Wow.
You know.
4 years.
Yeah. I started being okay with what was going on, you know, what had happened, you know what I mean? I started feeling okay.
Can we go back a little bit? Because you didn't just experience the death of my mom and your aunt. You also experienced the death of your mom.
Yeah.
Because her mom passed away about a year after our mom passed away.
Oh,
of
wow.
A brain tumor, cancer.
Wow, your biological mother.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. And I did go in another blackout. I did go on another blackout again.
So, yeah, I can see why. I mean, that's a lot of emotion coming down at you all at once. And yeah, when your brain can't process all that, it starts shutting down.
So it was my mom passing away. And then I say when I got about in 11th. No, that was after. Okay, my mom passed away. It was a kind of dark moment. And then my best friend ended up passing away, like, right after we graduated. You know, she was the only one there through it all, all of it. And, yeah.
What happened with her?
Well, her heart.
She had a rare disease.
And her heart stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were in the 11th grade, getting ready to be in the 12th or something. And she just suddenly one night, she just didn't wake back up.
Yeah. We had graduated before she passed. But one night after she graduated with me, it wasn't that long after we had graduated. She came on my house one late night, and she doesn't usually do that. And she came over and she said, "Lady, get up." That's my nickname, y'all. "Lady, get up, get up." And I'm like, "I'm not getting up. I'm resting." And so she was like, "Come on, I need you to get up." And so she came and I woke up and she said, "Walk with me to the bank." And I'm like, "Girl, do you know what time it is?" You know what I mean? But at the moment, I didn't realize that was God giving me ready to deal with the next level that was about to happen. You know what I mean? And so we walked to the ATM and she got some money. And then she said, "Well, LaTanya, I'm not going to be here long." And I say, "What do you mean you're not going to be here long? You're going to be here?" She was like, "No, I'm not." She said, "I got to have a surgery, and I don't think I'm going to make it." And so me, I'm like, "Yeah, you're going to make it. There's no way this is going to happen." And I got that call. She was gone.
Wow. She had a premonition then.
Yeah.
And God had revealed it to her. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So that was just one more brick on top of that.
Yeah,
wall of loss.
There it was. There it was. Then I was, you know, at that point, just searching for love at that point.
I bet. Yeah.
And that's where we found Billy.
Yes. That's.
No, we found Herbie.
Well, first Herbie. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Who's Herbie and who's.
That will be my older son's father.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah. And so during that moment of not being mentally healed, you know, I chose. And it wasn't good. But the beauty of it is your son. My son, you know,
he was ordained to be here.
Yeah, he was ordained to be here. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And he made her a mother.
Yes.
Something that she was searching for.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it don't always feel, it may not be the perfected, you know, message in the moment. It looks like a mess. And yet it's the perfected way that you make the choice and you see the goodness in it. Mm. And so the very thing that she had lost, I want to go back to chronological time. She had lost her aunt mom. She had lost her biological mom. She had lost her cousin mom. See, so she had three moms she lost. And so then in her time, eventually she became the very thing that she lost so much of. Now she had become a mom.
Yep, that's what happened.
And my sister would say to her, well, I'm glad you, because you're going to take care of it, you know. And this became her life. I mean, really, her son became her whole life because she knew what it was like. That's, to me, beginning the mess when God would begin to take some of her mess and create a message. Would you say that?
The change
or the transition was when you got Shaheen?
Yes. That was the transition because when I had him, you know, all this joy and everything else rushed in.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, oh, my God, I get to be somebody's mom. I get to give all this love out. And that's how I felt.
Isn't it amazing that you look at this little person and you think, wow, I didn't realize I could love this hard.
Man.
And this deep.
Yes.
And this much.
Yes. Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So that sounds like it kind of like woke you up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. A whole lot. A whole lot, you know. You know, understanding what motherhood was about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the struggle. So everything was like, oh, my God. Okay. I get it now. I get it.
Because she had to really focus on her son as well because there were some delays in him as well, and his delays created her to have a space to understand that his was not necessarily created because of loss, but his was created because it was that way. But depending on how she would have approached it would have been determined how he would have experienced it.
Yeah.
And because she was so focused on not giving him, you know, not necessarily giving him, but not allowing him to have to experience that trauma by himself, whether it was in his walking, his talking, because he didn't speak until he was about 4.
Wow.
Right.
And she would make sure he was at the doctor's.
I would do everything possible. I said, okay, now it's my chance. You know, what I went through, you know, in school and knowing life and things, I'm going to give it up my all. I'm going to protect him. We're going to get it.
Yeah.
So taking him back and forth to children's, getting outside help, you know, I did it.
And he ended up being diagnosed with autism, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And guess what? I still walked across the stage with my diploma, doing all that.
Wow.
With him.
Wow. That's too cool. That's too cool.
Yes.
Yep, she sure did. She was determined that she was going to graduate. She was going to have that child. She was going to take care of him. She persevered.
Yes.
And I've seen that strength just in, like, your entrepreneur spirit, entrepreneurial spirit, and how you approach things. And you got a fierce determination, girl.
Yeah,
you do.
I think that's how God took the mess and used it as resilience and made a message out of it.
Yeah.
And then she has a daughter now, and she has a granddaughter. But then I think the pivot came because we haven't talked about your dad. But can we just hear touch a bit on your dad? Because that's how she got to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Oh, from Hamilton. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I got to Cincinnati. I had contacted my dad. We didn't really have a close relationship, but I was determined that we were going to have a relationship.
Yeah.
She was determined.
That fierceness. Here we go. There you go.
And so, you know, when I got 18 and as I went after my dad, I went after him in a good way. Like I wanted a father, so I was going to make sure he hears me out. He was going to be the father, you know. And I got closer to my dad, and I said, Dad, I want to move to Cincinnati. I feel like I need a change. And he said, okay, then. I didn't expect him to say that. He said, okay, then I'll help you move.
Was this after your son was born?
This is after
her son was born and her daughter.
And my daughter, yes.
Okay.
Yes. This would have been in the early, I would say the middle 20. This would have been like 20.
22?
No, this is 2022 now. So
I mean,
no.
20. I mean.
It would have been, this no. would have happened, because I was here in Cincinnati by that time as well. I was out of prison and here in Cincinnati.
2008.
So that would have been like 2008 when this all happened.
Not 2022.
Yeah.
Right?
2008. But maybe 2022. I don't know.
It can happen.
Yeah. Well, it was 2008.
Yes, it was 2008. Maybe, shoot. Yeah. 2008. Mm-hmm. Yes, 2008. Yeah.
That's because Heather's born in 2010, right?
Yes, she is.
So it was 2008 because then 2 years later, you know, y'all gathered a relationship,
They
lived in the same building.
Yes.
You know what I mean? She came, and I'm telling you, that's really to me I was kind of reintroduced in her life. I was around because I had been out of prison since 92. So I would come to Hamilton and visit, but not really connecting with LaTanya as much. You know, I see her, but, you know, she was in Hamilton, I was in Cincinnati. So I was still getting my life together. You know, building my foundation, trying to make sure I stay straight. And then when she moved to Cincinnati in 2008, that's really when our relationship formed, where the healing for us began. Don't you believe?
Yes, that's when it began to.
You know, because we had to go revisit things I did anyway, things so I could have, and she could hear my heart. You know what I mean? That it was never because I didn't love her, but I didn't love me.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't even know how to love myself. And so how could I dare really love her in a way that she needed to be loved when I didn't even know who I was? And so it was never about her. It was more about me and the inadequacy that I had and the lack of love I had for myself that created was a ripple effect to the rejection and the abandonment that I created in her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
Which is the way it is for a lot of parents mm-hmm. that don't know how to parent, because you were, in essence, a parent to her for a time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the way it is with a lot of folks trying to be a parent, not knowing what they're doing, trying to deal with some of their own traumas and things that they've got going on in their life. Yeah, I get it.
So her dad was here. He was married. They got a relationship. Right.
Yes.
And he moved into a home.
He moved into a home with him and his wife. And we began our, you know, relationship.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
That's cool.
And then in 2012, was it 2012? Because it's been about 10 years your dad's been gone now. Or was it 2011?
My dad died in 2010.
Okay. So Heather was born in when?
She was born in
2008?
Yeah.
Okay, so mm-hmm. your dad, so Heather was born, which is her sister, And then her father and mother-in-law, her stepmom, adopted Heather. Hmm. And then in 2010, as she moved down here in 2008 and they gathered their relationship, little did she know that in 2010, her father would pass away.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
We found him.
Yeah.
Wow.
LaTanya and I was together and we found him laying on his bed. He had had a heart attack.
But you were given a couple of years to really get to know him.
Right.
Thank goodness you were tenacious and said, we're going to have a relationship.
Yeah.
It sounds like God just put that in you to give you that gift of 2 years.
Yeah, he did.
Well, she has insight. She has a gift on her anyway of insight and wisdom. She doesn't talk about it much, but she has it. She knows when God is speaking to her about something. And when he does, one of the things I've always admired about her, she didn't let nobody get in the way of it. Even with the fact, whether it was her friend, you know what I'm saying, and she got up, whether it's her dad, like, I'm having a relationship with you, it don't matter. Not knowing that 2 years was going to matter in the most of it, but she knew that she needed to do and she needed to get out of her own comfort zone. Mm-hmm. She came here. So it wasn't like she was waiting for him to come and seek her out. Mm-hmm. She sought him out and was willing to make all the accommodations she needed to make the message of making sure she was healed and all that they had dealt with was forgiven. Mm-hmm. And so when he passed away, from what she walked through that whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was just awesome because, like I said, me and my dad was able to talk and I was able to hear his side and share with him my side, you know what I mean? And yes, God set it up.
Sounds like your dad heard you too.
Mm-hmm. He did.
I mean, really hear you. Like sometimes I think you can share stuff with people and they kind of give you that cursory, I'm listening, but it sounds like your dad really heard you.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I like you, because when you talk about this story, I want people, the hearers, to hear the connection of how life, I always say life and choices, and in the middle, we find God in that place. And his wife passed away in January of that year, and he passed away in April.
Wow.
Of the same year. Mm-hmm. So there became this space between January and April that he really depended on LaTanya. That their relationship was almost, it was undetachable.
Yes.
Because now his wife was gone, and she kind of became the primary woman in his life.
Yes, I was.
Wow.
And I remember while I was doing that, taking care of my dad and being there for him. I'll never forget it when I heard God say, I looked at Heather and God said, you're going to be taking care of her. I'm like, where'd that come from? I ain't going to be taking care of her.
And this was your sister, right?
Yes. So, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And, so the story on this is, I remember visiting Matthew 25 church, and he was preaching about if God give you a responsibility of someone and it's not your child, would you do it? And I remember saying, yes, I would do it. And God brought that back to me in that moment. I said, okay, Lord. All right.
It's like, here I am. LaTanya, do you remember that time you heard that message?
Yes. That's how I speak.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
But then she again did enough. She did for Heather what my sister did for her and what our mom did for her.
Yeah.
She then in turn took Heather and raised her as her own. So Heather would not be in the system. And she has had Heather ever since. And now Heather will be 14 in January of next year.
Or 15.
15. Okay. Ooh. I always forget how. She'll be 15.
She'll be 15.
Wow. And she was 2 years old. So you've had her now for 13 years. About 13 years.
Yes.
Wow.
But even in this whole story, the just kind of summarize it up, is that LaTanya doesn't talk about this, but I will. You know, the mess to the message is LaTanya was, as she told, you know, everybody could hear her pain. What I want them to hear in this story is her passion, her purpose, and her perseverance. Because LaTanya was also labeled as disabled.
I was.
You know, and she was on disability, and she was all these things. So many labels were put on her. Go ahead.
I was supposed to be the child that wasn't going to make it.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so...
Look at you now.
But when she came to Cincinnati... when she came to Cincinnati to pursue what she believed God called her to, it almost becomes like someone who had been buried under labels. Even though she persevered, one of the things I want people to hear in this message, in the mess from the message, is that it's almost like I want people to visualize someone who has been buried, really. And in this burial, there's just been all kind of dirt put on them and labels and pain and all these things. In some kind of way, you know, it's like buried alive. Yeah. She had to dig herself out of that dirt.
With her choices, with her
decisions, with her forgiveness of her heart, with her perseverance to understand that everything don't work out like I want to, but they work out just like they should. For her to be willing to take, you know, the relationship to her dad. She left Hamilton, came to Cincinnati, pursued that. Her dad died a couple of years later. She took on her sister. And I'm telling you, she made a decision one day, and I've been in her life ever since, but she made a decision one day. She didn't want to be on Social Security. She wanted to get a job. And I remember her going to Cincinnati Cooks. Yes. And she began to pursue the impossible. She began to pursue... You know, she began to pursue the impossible. When I say the impossible, if she had waited on man to tell her, she would have stayed in that dirt.
Yes.
But it was God and her relationship to the Father that said to her that, no, I'm not staying in this dirt.
Yes. He said, get up, and let's go.
And she began. Now she works for the city. The message is, don't let no one tell you who you are. Find out who you are in God.
Amen.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because now she is raising, you know, she has a 27-year-old almost, and then she has I guess she'll be
23.
She'll be 23. She have a 23-year-old, and then she got a 7-year-old almost in June next month.
He'll be seven.
You know, and then she got her sister, which is, you know, she's 14 or 15, right? Well, 14.
She'll
you know,
be 15
so,
this year.
Right, so she, you know, just everything she's done, you just look at the whole mess that had the possibility of harnessing her to be a no, you know, to stand in that pain. And you just decided to get up with your relationship with God and make a message out of it.
Yes. Like he told the disciples, pick up your staff and let's go.
Yeah. Pick up that bed and let's walk.
Yeah.
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 And that's what you've been doing. You've been walking it out, getting ready to get a promotion with the city.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the things I've seen. An entrepreneur, she had a vision about Jordan Delight on a fast that we went to on, and she's pursuing that. It's just amazing. That's why I'm telling people, don't count people out. Don't count them out. I mean, I don't care what's happening in their lives. If God says that they got what he needs, he confounds the wise with the things that's unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Such a cool story. Yeah. Your journey is amazing. Journey is amazing. And I can just see the softness and the love of God all over you. Like, you just have such a kind heart and such a love for people. And that's amazing.
I do.
She does?
I do.
She really does.
I might not like behaviors of some people, but I love people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing your story with us and with everybody listening out there. And yeah, it's been amazing to see how God has taken you from mess to message and just, man, turned things around.
So what are some of your future aspirations as we close?
Well, my future aspirations is, I think I want to do one day a support group for teenage girls. I want to do that. That's on my bucket list.
Okay. Amen. I think you've been doing that even through your sister-daughter already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously, yeah. You know, you've been doing that with her for years. And, you know, I think that together with you and her would be an awesome opportunity to have a chance to share y'all's story with young girls or what it was like. You know, I have a woman in ministry, a friend that's called Nevertheless, and she, her name of her ministry is Nevertheless, and she works with young girls in different dynamics of stories. And maybe one day I can hook y'all up and you and Heather could share your story if she's willing, about what it was like to persevere and really become a support of each other, because Heather is just much as a support to you as you are to her.
She is.
You know, and she has been very, very well in that way to be able to help you see that you could be all that you are.
Yes, very good. She's a very good encourager. She's a helper. She has such a loving heart and fighter in herself.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again for sharing with us. Thanks for being vulnerable.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Amen.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lacreta Bowman.